we need to refer to King Aaron Judge by his name, which is King Judge. And I have been handed an official sheet now that has been fact-checked on the amount of infractions that occurred over the 2 weeks that I was gone. See, it pays to take vacation because then you can't commit the crime. So the grand total in week one was 49 for Morash, 14 for Tiki, 5 for Tommy. In week two, Sean got a little bit better and went from 49 to 47, 8 for Tiki, so he went down a little bit, 4 for Tommy, so he went down 1, and 2 for Paul Rosenberg, who has been doing a great job filling in. So grand total, $96 for Sean Morash in fines, $22 in fines for Tiki Barber, $9 in fines for Tommy Lugauer, and 2 for Rosie because they forgot to refer to King Aaron Judge as King Aaron Judge.
I don't remember Sean not saying King Aaron Judge 96 times in 2 weeks.
Well, that's
on
you.
It could obviously have been the case, but this is why we have to rethink this rule.
Stop it! He's the king! Just call him king!
All right, or we should be able to, like, prepay the week off. So we stop getting shamed at a discount. Prepay at a discount so you stop getting shamed by Dan every week.
Well, this is the fines that you pay. Like, for example, I forgot to get an inspection on my car. Like, it was due July 1st. I forgot. All right? Things got in the way.
You got to get an inspection on your car?
I forgot to, and it was due July 1st. So what? And I got it, so stop trying to give me tickets. Like, it's done. I got the inspection. But when I took my car in to the city, I guess right before I left, I got a ticket. And you want to know why I got a ticket, Tiki?
Why?
Because I committed not a crime, but I made a mistake. So if you don't refer to Aaron Judge as King Aaron Judge, that's a mistake. That's a dollar. Stop whining. I take you as someone that would not whine, Tiki.
I didn't think they gave tickets for parking inspections. I can't think of the last time I got my car inspected.
What?
Seriously, I mean, I
guess. Is that a rule around electric cars? You don't need to get inspected or something?
No, I think it's because. Well, how long have you had your car?
A long time now.
Well, that's why. That's why. Because when my lease is up, I get a different car.
No. That's not how this works. You have to get inspected, I think, once a year, bro.
No.
Yes.
That is not the case.
Yes.
What are you inspecting? Were the emissions?
I don't know what they do specifically during the inspections. I am not a car expert. Huh. But they put the sticker on your car that says, you know, the next due date, August of 26 or whatever it is. But
you know what? I used to remember those. But I think ever since I moved to Jersey, I haven't done that.
Oh, it may be a Jersey thing.
It might be a Jersey thing. Let me correct that. It might be a New York thing you have to do. And it's not a Jersey thing.
I just Googled, how often do you need to get your car inspected in New York? And I was correct. In New York, your car needs to be inspected every 12 months.
Okay.
You must also get a new inspection if you transfer ownership of the vehicle.
Right.
Now I'm going to change my Google search to New Jersey.
Right.
Oh, wow. You're right. Are you ready for this?
Yeah. Never.
In New Jersey, most vehicles need to be inspected every 2 years. New vehicles receive a 5-year inspection
period.
There
you go.
The specific date of your vehicle's inspection is indicated on the sticker displayed on your windshield. What's wrong with you guys?
Well,
in Jersey?
There you go. We don't.
That's actually a good thing about New Jersey.
Exactly. We take care of our cars better than New Yorkers take care of your cars. But I also think because I remember it was always like an emissions inspection,
right?
But I have an electric car, so there's no emission. So I bet I don't even need an inspection.
That's a good point. That was one thing I noticed about Europe. So I rented a car. I didn't just go to Europe. I drove Europe.
Right.
We rented a car in Barcelona, Spain, and then drove from Barcelona, Spain to Ez, France, which is about a 7-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
From Ez, France to Rome, Italy, which is another 7 hours. From Rome, Italy, back up to Venice, which is about 3.5 hours, eventually to Lake Como. So I did a lot of driving through 3 different countries, through Spain, through France, and through Italy. And let me tell you something. The emission rules that they have, like, you can't get in certain parts of the city if your car isn't efficient enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you stickers, and you can't go here, and you can't go there. And I had no idea. Now, my car was fuel efficient, because every car is fuel efficient
in
Europe.
Was it small, or was it big?
So that's the funny thing, Teak.
Because some of them, I think some of these big cars, they won't fit in some of these cities.
So I needed to get the biggest car possible because this vacation was with my two kids, my wife, and my in-laws. Right. They came too. And lots of bags because we're traveling. So I got the biggest car I could get. It wasn't even a minivan. It was a van. But it was fuel efficient. So it was a van, but it wasn't really like an America van. It was like a shrinked van. And then, to your point, not only are the streets tiny as all hell, the parking garages are tiny as all hell. I had to do like 12-point turns just to fit through the parking garage and eventually park my car. I mean, you talk about putting something giant in something tiny? That's basically what I was trying to do for 2 weeks. That sounded weird, but you get the point.
But it was entertaining. It was fun.
Was it entertaining?
I mean, the driving part. Like, because I've only driven in Europe a couple of times, but one was on the Autobahn, which was insane.
Right.
And another one was, what city were we in? I forget. But the streets were like so tight. I felt
very tight.
Nervous, just making a regular turn. It was hard for me. But I enjoyed it by the end of it because it was just kind of like a game.
Yes. So I enjoyed it, but I'm going to call two people out. Because why not? I got to be honest. I'm going to call out my wife and I'm going to call out my father-in-law. Because the breathing of these two people, every time I made a turn, every time there was a car that was close, I would hear. And I'm like, guys, can you let me do this? Like, can you let me handle this? And they were both, I love my wife. I love my father-in-law. They're wonderful people. But at times, I had to kick him out of the car. I had to say, you guys got to get out of the car. I can't deal with the breathing. I get it. It's tight. I get it. Trust me. I understand.
Right. Or you want to drive?
Yeah. Except I wasn't willing to do that. That's the problem.
True,
right. Because then Evan would be the person going, the whole reason you drive is because you want the control. I understand where they're coming from. In those tight spots, you don't have control. You're nervous.
Then shut up. That would be my advice.
Shut up.
Yeah, just don't say anything.
Shut up. They have a right to express their, not opinion, but their emotions as they're driving.
No. Their nervousness. It's their anxiety.
Of course it is, Tiki. Right. I think that's fair.
But it's not. See, this is spoken like a true non-driver.
Yeah, but you're a stranger in a strange land. You're not driving down to Disney or down to Carolina or through the tri-state area. You're in a world that no one's ever been to.
So?
You're driving on roads. The familiarity, you don't have it.
I never said I had the familiarity, but it doesn't help to have heavy breathing in the back seat and in the front seat.
I think you're overblowing the heavy breathing part, but okay.
I am not. Again, love my wife and love my father-in-law, but trust me, I'm sure they'd admit it too, by the way. If I pulled them up here and said, hey, what were you doing when Evan was trying to squeeze through that tiny spot? They were having a coroner.
Right. Did the van have an old crap bar? Like the old crap bar where you hang on to.
Oh, yes. The old crap bar, yes.
It did. So my car doesn't have one. So whenever I'm driving with Tracy, she grabs me instead. And I'm like, you're not helping. Right?
That's
if something
worse.
Bad is happening, startling me is not going to make it any better.
Yes.
So she ends up just grabbing the seat because she wants to grab the old crap bar, but it doesn't have one in my car.
Yeah, that would, I have to admit, that would be worse. If all of a sudden my wife or my father-in-law just starts grabbing me, that would have made things more difficult.
Right.
We'll get back to your sports calls, 888-808-1019. JR is calling from Somerville. What's going on today, JR?
Oh, my God. Imagine driving with the New York's Mr. Bean in Europe. I mean, I'd be making breathing noises. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Regarding the Mets and the clubhouse guy, they should have honored Kurt Radomski, the clubhouse attendant from the 90s.
Wow. Pulling out a Kurt Radomski reference.
Well, listen, Todd Hundley broke the home run record, and I think that was directly related to Kurt Radomski. Anyway, so outside of that, you guys are talking about third base in New York and, you know, whether the Mets or Yankees should do whatever. Caleb Durbin, huge weekend in L.A. with the Brewers. And if he played for the Yankees right now, he'd be the best third baseman in New York, you know?
I was thinking about that a few weeks ago because Caleb Durbin was obviously the key member to the trade for Devin Williams. And we heard him talked about so much during the offseason. And you look at his numbers and he's having a solid, I wouldn't say he's an all-star or anything like that, but he's had a solid year at third base. And you're right, the Yankees could use him right now, but they could also use Devin Williams. So... from that perspective, I don't think you regret that if you're the Yankees. But to Brian Cashman's credit, when he talked up Caleb Durbin during the offseason, he wasn't necessarily wrong. He's been a productive player.
Yeah, he's productive and he's under control for a while now.
But do you regret that trade of your Yankees?
No, of course not.
They need Devin Williams.
Right. You need Devin Williams, even though it feels like Luke Weaver is finally getting it back to where he was before his little whatever you want to call it when he was off. But you need two relievers. You need two solid guys. And now neither one of them is – I don't think Aaron Boone has reestablished either as the closer, but it almost is non-consequential.
Devin Williams is the closer on his team.
Right.
Devin Williams is the closer.
I mean, he hasn't said it, but it basically it's what it's come down to. But Luke Weaver has actually put himself back into the good graces of the Yankee fan.
Yeah, he responded.
Right. You respond.
Luke hit rock bottom with the Met game back on the 4th of July. But since then, he's pitched a lot better. And right now, I think the Yankees have three guys in their bullpen that you have in the somewhat circle of trust. And that is Luke Weaver, Devin Williams, and Tim Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you want to add more. I mean, here's the thing about the Yankees, the Dodgers, even the Brewers have won 10 straight. Certainly the Mets, the Phillies. Everybody's got flaws. So there are a lot of ways everybody can improve. And just so because the Yankees could use a starter and a reliever and a third baseman doesn't mean they suck. Doesn't mean they're a million miles away from a championship. It means they're human like every other team in baseball. Because you can say that about just about every team. Look at the way the Tigers are playing right now. Do they look flawless to anybody?
No. Yeah, they do now.
No.
They look flawed.
They look flawed, yes. Right. The opposite of that.
Right.
Let's go to John calling from Brooklyn. What's going on today, John?
Hey, John.
Hey, what's up, Evan? And Tiki. I just got back from Italy myself. I wanted to ask you real quick before I talk about the Yankees. What are you going to miss from Italy the most that you just can't get or can't get the same version of it in America or in New York?
Oh, that's a good question. I thought the food was ridiculous.
Yeah. My new fiance, we got engaged in Capri. And,
congrats.
The cappuccino and the – thank you very much. And you know what? On that point, Tommy, you love a woman enough, like – Forever, like do anything for her. The Notebook is always going to get you, so it's okay you cried.
John. Now that we're getting to know each other, you just said you have a new fiance. Did you have an old fiance before her, or do you mean like a recent fiance?
No, she was my girlfriend. I'm very happy to not have a girlfriend anymore.
Good to clarify.
We've been together for 6 years, so everybody's giving us the finally kind of thing. For me, it's you cannot get a cappuccino or a pastry anywhere in New York like you can get anywhere in Italy. Mm. You know, everywhere in Italy has the best cappuccino and pastry.
Yeah, but I think if I had to answer that, like, because the food was amazing and Tiki mentioned the pasta in Italy, but you know what? I go to Little Italy and get great pasta here in New York. Like,
True. We
got great Italian food too. So if I had to give one answer, I'd actually go to France. I would leave Italy. And then I'd go pastries because the pastries in France, like the croissants, I hate to be stereotypical, but they would melt in your freaking mouth. Like they were unbelievable. Yeah. So that'd be my answer.
I know. And you're going to miss it like crazy, right? It's like,
I don't want to take too much,
but real quick on that pasta thing, we took a pasta class there and you know what I learned?
What?
I prefer pasta al dente, but I learned in Italy that it's actually the reason that Italians eat so much pasta and they don't get fat is because they eat it al dente because your stomach can't process pasta properly if you overcook it because of all the extra starch. So you're actually better off. You should always cook your pasta al dente.
Did they give you the specific amount of time to boil the pasta?
Well, it's different because for them, it's always like either fresh pasta or fresh pasta that's been dried recently. So it's like kind of depends. And you just do like an al dente test. And if you throw it against the wall, they're going to smack you in the face. It's not how you do it. It's not. But, you know, it was a crazy fact for that I learned that it's actually better for your stomach to eat pasta al dente with a little bite. They say pasta should bite back. You know, when you chew it, it should kind of bounce off your teeth. Like it should bite back.
I kind of like that.
Anyway, with the Yankees, much earlier, like over an hour, 2 hours ago maybe, you guys said that you think the Yankees are going to crush Toronto.
I mean, yes.
I want them to. I'm a huge Yankees fan. But I called like 2 weeks ago telling what I thought should be the first six in this lineup every day, no matter what. Keep it consistent. Anybody that plays ball knows that you want to like settle into your spot in the lineup. We can't crush anybody right now because the lineup is different every single day. Like I can't stand it. Yeah. It just makes no sense.
Well, it's gotten a little bit more consistent than it was
a little bit. But like, it should. Belly hits lefties like crazy, and he still hits righties, and he's on a tear right now, and he's sitting today. Grisham,
you know why he's sitting?
On this team
Hold on. You know why he's sitting today? I have a reason. There's a good reason.
I want to know.
His career numbers against Gausman are awful. I think he's like 2-for-23 with a bunch of strikeouts.
But here's the thing, though, Evan. Can you do that?
Yes.
Can you do that against a guy who has been as hot as he has been?
Yeah.
I mean, let's not forget, he's had the double-digit, 15-game, maybe even more, hitting streaks.
Oh, he's been amazing.
So can you do that to a guy?
The reason I think the answer is yes is that 2-for-22 is a sample size that means something. You know what I mean? Like, it's not he's 1-for-8 or he's 0-for-9. Like, he's 2-for-22 against this pitcher, which makes you think that the arsenal of Kevin Gausman or just the way Kevin attacks Cody Bellinger is something that Cody has a tough time with. They shared the division years ago when Gausman was in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Cody was in L.A. And I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. You know, Trent Grisham hit that grand slam the other day, so he's sort of benefiting from it by being in the lineup. I think we all agree Jason Dominguez should be in the lineup, and Giancarlo Stanton should be in the lineup. So you're always, with the way the Yankees are built right now, sitting somebody that maybe you don't want to sit because they do have a lot of depth in their outfield, including DH with Stanton. And I think that when you're having a tiebreaker like this, like, all right, who do I sit? I don't think it's crazy to sit Cody Bellinger despite his hotness because of those numbers.
Yeah, but the matchup even works right. You know what I mean? So
in what way?
Because it's a righty and a lefty.
I know, but he doesn't see him well.
Okay.
Do you think 2-for-22 with 9 strikeouts means something?
I think it's horrible. And it's it's the second most at-bats against Gausman on the Yankees this year, or this in this certain situation.
So then why not follow the numbers?
So it's a big sample size. Because I don't love the numbers all the time.
They
sometimes
mean something,
I love the guy better than I love the number.
But so sometimes I'd agree with you. Sometimes I'd say, hey, you know what? The guy's hot, just stick with him. Mm. But I think because the Yankees have a lot of good options, like someone would sit that would make you say, are you sure about that?
Yeah, but like, but then you get into what he was just alluding to. The last caller was just alluding to how the lineup just gets changed too consistently. And all of a sudden, nobody knows what they're supposed to, where they're supposed to be.
And how has that affected them? Where do they rank in the American League in runs scored? I forgot.
They're number one. It's not
They're number one. So how's it affecting them?
It's not. It just feels inconsistent. So you go through these moments where you just you lose it for a little while, and then you're scrambling to find it again.
And who should be the everyday leadoff hitter for the New York Yankees? Because they have moved that.
Jason Dominguez. Not even a question.
Tommy. Who should be the everyday leadoff hitter for the New York Yankees?
Even though I picked Goldschmidt before the season in our little pool, it should be Jason Dominguez.
Right. And now, look, he went 0-for-5 yesterday, but it ultimately didn't matter in the game. But it's Jason Dominguez. He's got to learn to be that guy.
Well, I'm glad that Tommy says it's Dominguez and Tiki says it's Dominguez, and I'm sure Sean thinks it's Dominguez because that was my pick back in March.
That's right.
And so to have both
you set us up, dude. What the hell?
For those that are unaware,
by the way, I've quit this game, by the way.
You quit this game?
Yes, because I said Jazz, and he hasn't done it once.
We had a game, and I can pull up the exact date for those that are curious. It was late February, early March, in which I said, hey, you know, one thing that not many people are talking about. Now, eventually, we're all talking about it, but at the time, you know, it's still early spring training. You know, you're not sure yet. Like, hey, what are we talking about with baseball? Like, what's the story? I brought up the Yankee leadoff spot. And I said, who the hell is going to lead off for the New York Yankees? There's no great answer.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through a million different names, all the different options.
Right.
Actually, I have
on base percentage, looked at everything.
Yep. Actually, I have the exact date of when we did this. It's earlier than I thought. February 12th.
Wow.
So, literally, the Eagles just won the Super Bowl.
Did the Eagles even win the Super Bowl at that point?
They did. I think it was like a day later. And I'm like, hey, guys, who do you think is going to lead off for the New York Yankees the most? And the point of that topic back in February is that they didn't have good options.
Right.
And so I suggested it be Aaron Judge, which was my opinion back then. I still have it today. I would love to lead off Aaron Judge.
It's just never going to happen.
It's just not going to happen. So we all made predictions, not endorsements, predictions on who we thought would lead off the most for the New York Yankees. And as Tiki said, his prediction was Jazz Chisholm, who has done it how many times this season?
None.
Zero. Sean Morash's prediction was Anthony Volpe. How many times has he done it this season? Do we know?
I don't think a lot. It might have
been. Pulling it up. I think it's zero.
It's either one or two or none.
Kiss my fat ass! Yeah, that was a good one. I am looking at the grand totals. Anthony Volpe has done it zero times this season.
Wow.
Okay. Tommy went out of the box and said Paul Goldschmidt, who has done it the second most times. So he has a legitimate chance to win this thing. He's done it 32 times. The guy I picked was Jason Dominguez, who's on a little bit of a run lately because he's done it a bunch of times, but he's not doing it tonight. Jason Dominguez has done it 7 times. The guy who's doing it tonight is Trent Grisham, who actually leads this race. He's done it 37 times. None of us picked Trent Grisham because we all figured he was going to be a fourth outfielder. And he's got a legitimate chance to win this thing. So as of right now, as we sit here in late July, Grisham 37, Goldschmidt 32, Ben Rice 20, Jason Dominguez 7, Austin Wells 2, Cody Bellinger 1.
Yeah, the one thing I don't want to happen, and this is what Sean would say, is you're going to reward or punish Jason Dominguez for having bad games. And this is what it feels like.
He should just lead off.
He went 0 for 5. So, you know what? Let's sit him down for a day. Let's give him a break and not put him in that pressure position to get on base at the beginning of every game. We're going to sit you down, and we're going to throw Trent Grisham up there, our fourth outfielder. That's the problem with it.
I agree with you. So from that standpoint, consistency can be overrated, but I think there should be 2 leadoff hitters, if I'm being fair. Against right-handers like tonight, it should be Jason Dominguez. And against lefties, to be fair for Tommy, it should be Paul Goldschmidt. I think fair straight platoon. What's up?
What? So we have some Met news here. Mendy's meeting the media right now. Starling Marte, this is according to Mendy, should rejoin the team this week. He doesn't anticipate a rehab assignment. So Marte should be back with the team this week. They're not anticipating.
Yeah, that was the knee issue, soreness, or whatever the heck it was. It felt like they just sat him down to give him a couple extra days leading into the All-Star break to just chill out and relax and get off his feet a little bit. So coming back without a rehab assignment is not surprising.
That's it?
Yep, and then obviously the Alvarez stuff, he was called up and Sanger got sent down, and then Rico Garcia's claimed off waivers by the Yankees.
Rico! Rico Garcia pitched like 3 scoreless innings as a Met, and I said on the Rico Bronya, hey, maybe they have something with him, and then they DFA'd his ass, and the Yankees claimed him, and he gave up a bunch of runs for the Yankees, and then they DFA'd him, and now he's a Met. So welcome back, Rico Garcia. He's a part of the Met bullpen. I'm so excited. I'm very, very excited.
No, you're not.
Why not? I like Rico Garcia better than Jimmy Herget or Kevin Herget, whoever
just,
the hell
you
they
just
had.
Like the similarities in the name of the podcast you hope happen to host.
I got to tell you, doing a show from home is like a nice treat every once in a while because, you know, you save the traffic. It's an easy commute. I had to do it today because I had a whole doctor's thing here where I live. I wasn't even sure I was going to make the show. But I've been with my family for 2 weeks straight. Mm. Like, this is the I kind of want to go to work thing. So I went down during the last break and I walked in on, you know, mama yelling at one of the kids because they weren't doing something right. And I quickly turned around, went upstairs and said, wait, stay up here.
Not my problem. I am effectively at work right now. That I am in the house, but I am at work right now.
That's right. Like, I'm one of those guys, I think you're very similar, where, yeah, doing a show from home once in a while would be great. Like, it's, you know, maybe there's something that night.
The commute is amazing.
Yeah, a break from the commute once in a while. Yeah,
I did it a couple months ago when I hosted Mikey Sherrill at my house. It was great.
That's right. And it was great. It was convenient.
Right.
Today was one of those days where I was like, I kind of want to go to work, man. I haven't been there in 2 weeks. God knows what's growing in my office right now. I mean, I was almost half expecting to go to my office, and then Craig's just sitting there saying, yeah, took your office. Sorry. Rumors are true. And I'm like, what the hell? Right. So I'm kind of nervous about that. Can you make sure he's not sitting there?
I'll go look. If you want your office back, you got to take it back from Tiki, because I'm in your former office.
That's right. That's a good point. David Stearns is meeting the media. This is not abnormal. We've talked about this before. He meets the media during the course of basically every homestand, but a lot of times there isn't much attention paid to it.
Yep.
But we are a week and a half before the trade deadline, so David Stearns is speaking. I don't know what he has said, but Tommy Lugauer does, so he sent it to the trade desk. Tommy, is it worth hearing from David Stearns?
Yeah, so I'm going to play 2 clips for you. The first clip is David Stearns talking about the Mets being active. Now, you know, the trade deadline is next Thursday. The Mets are going to be active in the bullpen market. Here's David Stearns.
Just with the trade deadline approaching, you guys have run into some bad luck. 5 guys, season-ending surgeries on the pitching staff. What are some areas that you are looking to perhaps improve as we get there?
Yeah, I think first of all, we will improve our team. We like upgrades everywhere. And so I think we cast a pretty wide net and we'll continue to do so. Specifically, you touched on we've been hit with injuries in the pitching staff, I think specifically the bullpen. And so we will be active there. And I think providing our group some reinforcements in the bullpen would be great. There are generally relievers traded at the deadline, and so I'm sure there will be some this as well, and we'll be involved in that. I think if, you know, ideally we'd find deals that we think make sense, bring guys in who we think can help us. If that doesn't happen for some reason, then, you know, we probably have to begin to think about some of the arms at AAA and whether those guys at some point can impact us in the bullpen. The challenge with doing that in season is once you do that, you can't reverse yourself in the same season. We can certainly reverse ourselves over the offseason, but once we shorten someone up to give them a chance to be a member of our pen, really tough to build them back up if you need them as a starter. And so we want to be very cautious if we're going to entertain that.
That is a, to me, when he's talking about, hey, we weren't able to add good relievers at the deadline, let's take some of our top prospects right. and move them to the bullpen. To me, that's a September 1st kind of thing. That reminds me of Jabba, and it worked out so well for the New York Yankees in 2007 until the midgets got involved.
Right.
But Jabba Chamberlain was a top starting pitching prospect. Same thing with Phil Hughes, and the Yankees used them very effectively out of the bullpen. I think that's an option. It's not necessarily the ideal option because you want to improve yourself with, you know, proven major league relievers. And what we saw last year from David Stearns is he got relievers. He just got what I like to call lottery ticket relievers. Mm-hmm. Guys who are not having good years, guys who aren't going to cost you much, figuring change of scenery, maybe you get something out of them. And I kind of expect, Teak, that that's what he's going to do when it comes to relievers at the
deadline. You're right. And look, it didn't necessarily help last year a ton. I mean, it did a little bit, but Brazoban turned out to be one of those guys, right?
This year, yes.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And this year, he's been mostly good. But it's just an interesting proposition to think that because there's so many teams that are in the exact same spot. They need relievers. They need arms for the end of the regular season, into the postseason, that you might get shut out. And then you got to turn to all these names that you've heard about from the minor league system for the Mets, from Tong to Noah McClain to Sproat, all those guys. Like, do you want... Like, you want to see them and it'd be awesome. You just have zero idea whether they're going to perform or not on the major league level.
You
and
don't
that's
know
the danger.
It's dangerous, but man, it's
worked
exciting, before.
Though, but it's exciting because you're we've been talking about this kid forever. We want to see him. And now you see him and you're like, dude, you better be the goods, man.
Well, and also, like, if you, let's say you took Brandon Sproat, who's pitched really well in his last four starts, and said, all right, we're going to make you a reliever. We feel good about our rotation. It's relatively healthy. If there are injuries, we've got other options to go to. Mm-hmm. We're going to make you a reliever. And he's electric. You could use him as a 2-3-4-inning weapon out of the bullpen.
Of course.
Because he's already stretched out.
Right.
So there are good possibilities.
As long as he's good. It's like with the Yankees with Schlittler. Like, he's become this, and now someone we hope we can depend upon as a regular starter. But say they get healthy and they don't need him. He could be a bullpen arm, especially if he's up here long enough.
We have to make one deal. This is an agreement that every Met fan, in this case the Mets, because the Yankees aren't in a situation like this where they're going to take top pitching prospects and make them relievers, at least as of right now. But we all need to make an agreement. Because when Jabba Chamberlain dominated, something happened. And I was on the other side of this argument. This was one of the early arguments because I was still new around here, first year working with Joe. But all the veterans around here, Francesa, Beningo, Jabba's a reliever. Jabba's a reliever. Mm-hmm. And I fought back against that saying, well, hold on a second, guys. He's a top pitching prospect who did great out of the bullpen, but wouldn't you rather have a top pitching prospect become a starter?
Of course.
But because he was so good out of the bullpen, it was so intoxicating. Nobody wanted to move him back to the rotation. So the deal I want to make with Met fans is if they did this with Sproat or McClain or Tong, and they're amazing, like, oh my God, helps the Mets get to the NLCS or dare I say win a championship. Next year, they're starters. Don't fall in love with them becoming relievers full time because I've seen that before.
Right. It reminds me of the Luis Gil thing. Everybody thought he's going to eventually go into the bullpen. He'll be the bullpen guy. There's an innings limit. He put him in the bullpen, protect him. Maybe they should have, he wouldn't have had surgery, but it doesn't matter. Like, ultimately, he became a great starter.
And that's better.
It's what's more important. It's if you can get a good starter who can get you length, and you expected him to be a bullpen guy, but he's now actually the starter, you're much better off.
Now, here's where that relates to the Mets today, and I don't know if David Stearns was asked this question pointedly, but I've talked about this on the Rico, and I'm sure other people are now starting to kind of think of this as a good option. And some people thought this was an option back in April, so trust me, I wasn't the first to say it, and that's the idea that the Mets could add a starting pitcher and simply move Clay Holmes to the bullpen.
Right.
Which I am now open to.
Sean said that last week.
Yeah, good. He's right. Now, here's the key. So before I say he's right, the key is it needs to be the right starter. Like, I'm not moving Clay Holmes to the bullpen because I've given up on him as a starting pitcher. I still think he's been decent as a starter. Does he go deep into games? No. We obviously know that. I still think he can be a good starter, but based on the way this team is built right now, based on the fact they don't get a lot of length from their rotation, based on the fact that their bullpen isn't very strong, if they could acquire Mitch Keller, if they could acquire Sandy Alcantara, is maybe not the best example because he still has a 7 ERA, but if you could acquire a good starting pitcher, then you can make yourself better in two areas. You improve your rotation by acquiring that starter, and you simply take Clay Holmes just for this season, can move him back to the rotation next year, and use him out of the bullpen. I think that should be an option, but Tiki, it's only an option if you acquire the right starting pitcher.
Yeah, and the reason I pushed back on this with Sean last week is because of what it would mean emotionally. Now, I think for Clay Holmes, would be an unbelievable teammate. He'd just say, whatever, Skip, whatever you need me to do. All right, need me to come out of the bullpen, be a long guy, whatever. Hell, if you need me to be a closer in some situations, I can do that as well. That is if you use Edwin Diaz earlier in the game in a high leverage situation. So it would work, and I think he would say, fine. But I wonder emotionally, like privately, would he be disappointed? And how would that affect him?
Well, and here's the key to this. And this is why probably Zach Gallen or Merrill Kelly is the better starting pitcher to add than Keller. Keller signed long term. So you trade for Mitch Keller. He's here for a couple of years. If you acquire, let's say, Merrill Kelly, who's had a better year than Zach Gallen, you put your arm around Clay. I'm putting my arm around the fictitious person right now. And I say, Clay, this has nothing to do with you. This just has to do with the way this team is made up and who is available at the trade deadline. We promise you, you are going back into the rotation next year. This wasn't a failed experiment. This was we got to the middle of August now, or early August, and the way our team is built and the way other guys have pitched and the availability at the deadline has led us to this being our best avenue. But don't worry, bro, you're in the rotation next year. And I think if you frame it that way, would there really be any, you know, emotional issue?
No. I mean, yes, but not publicly. And that's really all that matters.
All that matters is he goes to the bullpen and pitches well.
That's
right. Can't be the guy he was in September for the Yankees.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Anything else from David Stearns, Tommy?
Yeah, so David Stearns was asked about his appetite to add another position player at the deadline.
You mentioned pitching. What is your appetite or desire level to add offensively?
You know, I look at our position player grouping, and for the most part, I'm pretty pleased with where we are. I think our younger players have taken a step forward. When we're talking about Brett Baty and Ronnie Mauricio, both those guys have contributed. Positionally, the one position where we haven't gotten the level of production that we probably anticipated coming into the year is center field, and I don't think I'm saying anything that's going to surprise anyone. But I really like the defense that Tyrone Taylor brings and how he contributes to this team. And I also think Jeff is growing more comfortable out there. So I think for me at least, the bar to improve center field has probably risen over the past, let's say, 2 weeks because of maybe Jeff's comfort level a little bit more out there. And also continuing to recognize the secondary skills that Tyrone can provide. So that's the obvious position, and I understand that. I'm certain we're going to be engaged, but we got to clear a bar that we actually think makes us better, given the price that I think these things are going to cost.
I'll tell you, he's honest, man. Because basically what he told you is don't hold your breath on a bat.
No, that just became like an 8-foot high jump right now.
Yeah.
You're not going over that one.
No, I kind of agree with him. I kind of disagree with him. I agree with him about the bar with McNeil in center field. I mentioned that earlier. I think he's played a good enough center field where you know, you've got the flexibility to just make him the everyday center fielder. And if Beatty and Vientos and Mauricio are performing, third base, second base, DH is all filled, and McNeil plays most of the time in center field with Tyrone Taylor and maybe eventually Jose Siri coming off the bench for defense, I think it's fine. But I still think you need to be active. And if you can find a bat that improves your... Because where I disagree with him is that Mauricio, Beatty, and Vientos have been so good. I mean, Ronnie Mauricio's shown you some signs, but the guy was getting booed out of City Field on Saturday.
Yeah,
he cannot hit right-handed also, by
true,
the way.
But that was a circumstance. But Beatty has felt like he's been more engaged. And it's interesting because when we were talking about the Yankees, and you're like, just get a third baseman over there who can hit 220, right? And maybe run into some home runs every now and then. That's Mark Vientos, by the
right.
way. And so if Mark Vientos was on the Yankees as a third baseman and you knew his potential from a year ago, you'd say, you know what, we're fine. We don't need a third baseman. We're all good. But the Mets, who because their stars aren't playing consistently enough, I'm talking about Lindor and Alonso and Soto, especially with runners in scoring position, are not playing up consistently to where they're supposed to be, you feel like you need an upgrade.
Right.
You know, and so it's what the Mets really need is Francisco Lindor to be Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso to be who he was at the beginning of the season and Juan Soto to be the all-star that's a $7 million a year guy. And then all these issues don't feel as bad.
Well, there's a few other things. Like Vientos is the guy from last year, like you talked about. Alvarez hits and is a plus offensively now that he's been recalled. And if those things happen, then yeah.
He's in the starting lineup today? Is he not? Is he in?
Who are we talking
Francisco
about?
Alvarez? Is he in the starting lineup?
He is in the starting lineup.
Interesting.
I assume he's going to play most of the time.
Right.
I think when you recall him, and it's funny, Luis Torrens had, other than the bad throw on Saturday,
right,
and that was horrendous throw on the pickoff attempt, he had a great weekend. Like, he had some awesome at-bats. He had four hits. He drove in the game-winning run. He had a big caught stealing on Sunday in the seventh inning. Like, he had one of his best weekends outside of course, the big error.
Right.
But Alvarez gives you more upside. One more clip here from David Stearns.
Yeah, you guys were just touching on it as far as the third base situation, and Stearns was asked about any type of trade at third base. Are you going to stick with the guys you got?
David, so then at third base, whether it's a timeshare or somebody outright claiming that position, is it fair to say that you anticipate the group that you have, for the most part, being the people that you rely on for that position in the second half the rest of the way?
That would be my expectation.
No, so there you go. I'm telling you, they're not hitting a bad piece on that conversation. They're not. Like, they're going to look at Winker and Marte's return, the young players who continue to get opportunities, McNeil, who has hit and has played a decent center field, Alvarez being recalled, and say, hey, yeah, we're only scoring 4.3 runs per game. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's what I got out of that.
I got out of that they want a couple of bullpen arms, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
You didn't even hear anything about the rotation.
No.
Because they can view the rotation as, well, Mania's healthy, Senga's healthy,
mm-hmm.
Peterson is there, and I talked about this earlier, that's probably the strength of the team, the top three guys in the rotation.
Right.
And then you've got Clay Holmes. And then you've got, you know, depth now with Paul Blackburn on his way back, not that he's any great shakes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he probably looks at the rotation as fine, the offense is fine, and says, just like last year, I'll add a few bullpen arms. A lot of Met fans aren't going to love that, by the way.
No.
Met fans are not going to be thrilled by that.
Yeah, but it still feels like the hope is just Lindor, Alonso, Soto, I guess Nimmo to an extent, since he's part of the, what do they call him? The Fab Four, since he's part of that group.
I call them the Flushing Four. We don't copy the Beatles or the Fab Five. Flushing
this is your owner.
Four.
This was your owner.
Okay, I disagree with him.
I agree as well. I mean, I disagree as well. I agree with you. I disagree with him because they're not the Beatles.
Why don't we just give them a name and run with it? Okay, so we are going to call them the Flushing Four. That's it, over and over again.
Flushing, what does that even mean?
That's where they play.
I understand that, but it's not an adjective. It's just like
it's got to be an adjective.
Isn't that fabulous? Is an adjective, right?
Yeah, but they're the four from Flushing. Isn't that enough?
Yeah, but that's just it doesn't mean anything.
That's so you're
just,
not going to join
just
me
like saying that we're the. That we're the 345 Hudson Four. You know what I mean? Like, what the hell does that mean?
Maybe it means they flush and they maybe do a courtesy flush, too.
No, it's not telling us that you're good, you're bad, you're just from Flushing.
So what do you want to call them, then, since you don't like my idea?
I don't know. I thought you... I'm sorry to disrupt and bust your bubble, because you thought that was clever.
But I didn't think it was clever. I merely thought it was better than just putting Fab ahead of a number. Like, it's been done before. It's been done in sports. It's done. So why are we copying that? Just we own Flushing. The team plays in Flushing. The Flushing Four.
Yeah. Does that mean they're good?
I don't know what it means.
What about the Maine Mets?
Shut up. What did he say?
The Maine Mets.
The Maine Mets.
Maine. I don't understand that.
Right. Like a Maine topic.
What are they, from Maine?
No, that's a state.
Without the E.
Without the E.
Your ideas are terrible.
I like, but Evan, I like yours.
Unfortunately, he's on the board, so he can't turn his mic off.
But Tiki brings up the whole adjective thing, which I didn't realize it had to be a verb or whatever.
Is that what it's supposed to be?
I don't know. We don't think of it that intellectually. We just went, okay, there's an F word, and then there's another F word, and we can't use the F word we want to use in front of it sometimes. So we
That's
use
what
that
I
word.
Called him this weekend. I'll tell you that right now.
The Flushing Four is very creative.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing I do need to address. I've alluded to this for now an hour, but I have to get it off my chest. I feel like when you make a jersey, when you decide, hey, I want to put my last name on a jersey, which is very popular. Mm. You know, at Citi Field this weekend, I wouldn't say it's half the people because most people are wearing David Wright or Lindor or whomever. But a lot of people put their last name. I'd say 20% of the jerseys you'll see at Citi Field are somebody's last name. Now, that's not my cup of tea. That's not something I would do. Mm-hmm. Whenever a franchise around town, like the Islanders have done this, and I appreciate it, the Devils did it once, send me a jersey with my last name on the back. I thank them. I hang it up. I'll never wear it. I'm not going to walk around with my last name on a jersey.
Yeah, that's odd. That's weird.
But I respect that people do it, okay? Here's what I don't respect. It's got to stop. You can't put a retired number on your back and put your last name. Can't do it. No. You can't have a 41 jersey if you're a Met fan and put Jones on the back.
Yeah, that's a level. I don't know the extremity of that level, but it's a disrespect. It's the level of disrespect.
Yes. Yes. Mm. And I saw that this weekend with number 5. I'm like, wait a second. You got your last name on the back?
But hold on. They might have had those number 5s forever though. Before it was retired.
Okay, here's my answer then. You got to retire the jersey. You can't wear that jersey.
Well, maybe they wore it there one last time.
To honor David Wright?
Let this be a public service announcement going forward. You have to retire that jersey, just like the Mets retired his number, and hang it in your closet or go get it framed and hang it on a wall somewhere, but you can no longer wear it.
You can't wear it. So you agree with me on this. I thought this was going to be an unpopular opinion.
No,
all right, you agree with me, Tommy?
I think it's a level of disrespect.
Thank you.
I couldn't disagree with you more, Evan.
Come on, Tommy.
Teak, it's just a fella or a gal wearing a jersey to the game. They're not disrespecting David Wright or Keith Hernandez or Gooden or Seaver or anybody. Like, come on, Ev.
Tommy, would you walk into this studio wearing number 13?
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't.
Oh, wait, but that's a whole... Well, hold on. That's because we made an official...
It's official.
But there was official documentation. If Steve Cohen wants to tweet out something instead of comparing the Mets to the Beatles and say, listen, you will not be allowed in Citi Field if you wear the jersey number of a retired number and your last name's on the back, then that's fine. But this is Evan making a fan rule that I completely disagree with.
Why would you disagree with that? You don't cringe when you see somebody, whether it's a Giant fan or a Met fan or a Knick fan, wearing a retired number with their last name on the back? That's the most cringeworthy thing you can do.
No, I appreciate it. Like, I think it's funny. Like, we talked about all the time, like, having the ironic jersey. I saw somebody in a Vogelback jersey on Saturday. I think it's kind of funny. I don't think it's or creative or in a way, or just being a little bit different. I don't have a major issue with it. They're not taking grounders at short. They're not going to take an at bat. They're just sitting in the bleachers.
I know, you know what I mean,
the stands.
It just makes me cringe. Like, I didn't like, and it never really jumped out at me until Saturday. When I was walking around, I started to notice it. It was almost like the glass ceiling breaking, and then you notice it all the time. Like, you can't wear a retired number. You just can't do it. With your name on the back, who the hell are you? You're just some guy watching the team. You're putting your name on the back of number 41? On the back of number 31? On the back of 17? 16? Come on. You know who would agree with me on this?
Who?
Sean Morash.
No, he would not. He wants
You think he would disagree with me on this?
He wants to unretire Babe Ruth. He wanted to give Abdul Carter LT's number. He doesn't care if somebody's walking around with Jones and Lawrence Taylor's number on or whatever at a Giant game.
That's different. You know why that's different? He's a fanboy, so he's talking about other players taking the number.
Yes.
if he's watching just some guy walk through the parking lot wearing a retired number,
it's
with
a fashion
his
statement
name on the back.
You have no eye for fashion. It's a fashion statement. It's you saying, or it's you trying to live out like a fantasy that, all right, I'm, you know, whatever, 24 for the Mets, and I have my last name on the back. I think you're way out of line here. I really do. I think you're trying to tell people what to do.
Tiki, honestly, do you think he actually believes this, or he saw you and I agreeing and said, I can't make this a clean sweep. I have to disagree with
I think he wants to make it a clean sweep. But he's trying to be positive Tommy and the voice of the fan. And so he knows that there is a population of fans that are doing this, and he wants to defend them.
Oh, so he's being a populist.
He's being a populist. That's right.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Populists don't get elected, though.
You gotta be principled. Lead us.
I don't know about that.
You got to race to one of the edges.
That's true. We'll get to more of your calls coming up at 888-808-1019. We'll also get you set for Yankees, Blue Jays. How important is this three-game series? We'll check in with John Flaherty, who's going to be calling the game tonight on the YES Network. It's Evan and Tiki here on The Fan.